Accession number 18007, reel 2.
Mr. Skeets, reel 2.
Yeah, any sailor who, say, wished to discuss his conditions of service with his divisional officer was required to make out a written request, hand it to the chief of his top, who would pass it to the officer concerned. And then, when an interview was granted, there would be the officer, the chief of the top, and possibly even an RPO to keep the peace.
Did you ever do that yourself?
No.
But were there friendly relations between the sailors and the and the officers?
No. The officers were officers. They lived in the luxury of the wardroom and had real food to eat. Sailors were sailors were sailors. We lived on the mess deck, lived off wooden tables, and had some pretty fearful food to eat. KR and AI, you know, that's the Navy's rule book, expressly forbids any form of fraternisation or friendliness between officer and man. And we were poles apart. They lived one end of the ship, we lived the other, and that was it. And in all my time in the Navy, I don't recall one friendly word or gesture from a naval officer. Even with, later on, aircraft, there was no crew spirit. We met at the aircraft. The air gunner and the two officers that formed the rest of the crew, we met at the aircraft, we parted at the aircraft. And that was near as we ever got to one another. We weren't a crew in the sense of the word.
Did any of the sailors prefer it that way, or would they have preferred more friendship?
I can't speak for others. In general, I think it would have been advantageous if there had been a little bending of this rigid discipline that kept us apart. After all, we all three fought the same war in the same aircraft, from the same ship. But we touched down, we went our various ways.
Did you have respect for the officers, for their competence and so on?
Not in so many words. One had to accept that they were trained, the same as we were, and we had respect for their training. But as for the person, why? I had nothing to respect my pilot or observer for. Admitted, they were well trained, they did their jobs well. I have no complaint about that. But as persons, we were strangers.
Did you ever get, in your experience, any kind of mutinous spirit in the Navy? Because there had been a mutiny at Invergordon before you joined.
Yes, I remember it well. I've been in situations where that nearly happened, but good sense prevailed because, as I've said, Jolly Jack always loses. Now you've mentioned that, one day in Pompey I was having a quiet pint to myself and there was a rather sad-looking person near me, so I spoke to him, we got talking, and of all things, he was one of the people that took part in the Invergordon riots. And at the time, no action was taken against him, except sending him straight abroad to the China station for 2 years, and when he arrived back in England, he was put outside. Services no longer required. So without a trial, he was punished.
Which ship had he been in?
I don't know, but he was up at Invergordon, and he recalled the riots there, which were, as you know, down to Nancy, who cut the sailors' pay.
Nancy?
Lady Astor. And the big thing was about it, it wasn't a percentage cut all round, it was an amount. So that poor old Jolly Jack, with his sixpence a day, suffered a tremendous cut in his income, whereas an admiral could laugh it off.
Now, coming back to Revenge, when did you leave that ship?
I've got my papers up there, but I won't disturb things to get them. I think I was on her for about 9 months to a year, and then I was switched to a destroyer, the Wild Swan, who made history during the war. I wasn't on her, but the Wild Swan was attacked by 12 Junkers 88s and sank six of them. And after a while in the Wild Swan, I was moved to the Blanche, another destroyer, and was mixed up in the Spanish War. We would patrol the coast of Spain and be bombed and generally ill-treated by either side. It didn't matter. We were there. And I recall one Easter when we went to the rescue of the crew of the Canarias. That's a German, a Spanish cruiser which was sunk during the night. We raced off, and when we got there, she was sunk. But there were plenty of debris, bodies and men. And I recall, as we dragged them inboard, we could see on the other destroyers doing the same thing. There were vertical black bars all the way along the ship's side where they dragged men out of the oil fuel. And whilst we were doing it, they bombed us. And one person was killed, one sailor was killed.
Did you personally take part in that rescue?
Yeah. It was just a matter of hauling people out of the drink covered in oil fuel. And I forgot the man's name. It was a hyphenated name.
Which man?
The man that was killed. He was in a cutter which was away picking up people, and they caught the bomb.
How many people did you pull aboard?
One doesn't count under those circumstances. You're doing a job and that's it.
Lots of them.
Yeah, there weren't that many, considering the size of the Canarias. And not many of them were alive. It was just one big, vast area of debris and oil fuel.
What was done for them aboard ship?
Oh, just cleaned up and taken to Gib, to hospital.
Were you far from Gibraltar?
No. And the other funny thing about the Spanish War was I was in Gibraltar at the time when the Jamie Primero, that was a Spanish battleship, she came nosing her way towards the mole, because we were tied up against the South Mole, and this damn great battleship came nosing its way up to the mole, and the men on board were calling out for water. And the noticeable thing about it was she had no guardrails. And we were told afterwards that the crew had mutinied, wrapped up their officers in the guardrails and thrown them overboard. But she was turned away. They refused to help her in any way. I don't know whether that would have broken any rules of law, of war, or what. But the Jamie was turned away.
Had the mutineers taken over the ship?
Yes, the mutineers had taken over the ship.
And this was at Gibraltar?
Yeah.
Did you see the ship for very long?
No, she nosed her way up to the mole. They refused to give her any help, so she sailed away.
Any other Spanish Civil War memories?
Yes. A bit of cloak and dagger work. We embarked two men at Gib and two a small dinghy and two large sinkers. And we went into the Spanish coast near Cartagena, or Cartagena, at dead of night. And we eased our way in until the forefoot touched the bottom. And we put this dinghy over the side, and these two men rowed inshore. And it was arranged that we would come back in 4 nights' time and pick them up. Well, they went inshore, and we heard a lot of gunfire, small arms fire, machine gun fire, and silence. So we pushed off, came back 4 nights later to pick them up, but they didn't turn up.
Were these English or
Spanish? They were English, and I find it comic that they were dressed like two English country gentlemen. Goodness knows what impression they were trying to make inshore. They didn't look like tourists. They looked just like country gentlemen.
Were they members of the ship's complement?
No, no. We picked them up in Gib, in civvies, as they were dressed. They must have been two very brave men.
Did you speak to either of them?
Eh? Oh, rating? Never be allowed to speak to someone of officer quality.
How did you like being on in a destroyer after a battleship?
I preferred destroyers. They were smaller, chummier, and one knew everyone in the crew.
Was there much difference between serving in HMS Blanche and HMS Wild Swan?
Well, the Blanche was a later model. The V&Ws, the Wild Swan, was a V&W destroyer, of course, built in the First World War. And Blanche was built, she was one of the B-boats, naturally, and she was built later. Because at that time, the destroyers were known by their initial letter. Each flotilla began with, for instance, the A-boats, the Acates, Amazon, Ambuscade, and so on. And then we, the B-boats, were the Blanche, Boadicea, Boreas, Basilisk, Brilliant, and so on. And C, D, E, each known by their initial letter.
So the higher up the alphabet, the better the conditions on the ship?
Yes, because they were, say, later models.